From WBEZ Chicago and PRX, this is Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis.
Today we talk with living legend Mavis Staples. We talk about her start in gospel music and her role on the front line of the civil rights movement.
The songs inspire you. The songs motivate you. Keep on marching. Music is a strong weapon.
Plus, we'll review Relatives in Descent, the new album from Detroit art rockers Proto Martyr.
And we'll remember soul singer Charles Bradley. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
This is Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And coming up, we've got a review of new music from one of our favorite bands of recent years, Proto Martyr.
Not by my own hand. Automatic writing by phantom will. Now with my own voice. Pleurisy made a stand on two legs.
But first, the inimitable Mavis Staples.
Paul and Silas, bound in jail, had no money for to go their bail. Keep your eyes.
We spoke with the gospel and soul legend earlier this year, and the interview is one of our favorites ever. No holds barred. We talked so long, we had to make two episodes out of it, Greg. And part of this, I think, is because of your relationship with her. You, of course, wrote a fantastic biography of Mavis. The first conversation focused on her upbringing here in Chicago and the Staple Singers' music, the emergence later on as a solo act. You can hear that conversation at soundopinions.org. Today, we're still talking music with Mavis, but we're looking specifically at the social engagement of her with the Staple Singers and her as a solo artist, something that continues now, and it's very inspiring, and you can hear it on her new record coming out soon, If All I Was Black.
If all I was black, looking at you, you might look past all the love I give.
Got love to give.
I've got natural gifts.
Got natural gifts.
Got perspective.
Got perspective.
Might make your shift.
Greg, as I said, you literally wrote the book on Mavis. I'll take you there. It's a fantastic bio. I make my students at Columbia College read it. It's the current selection, you're too modest to tell the world, but I will, of the Chicago Public Library's One Book, One Chicago program, which means everybody in Chicago has to read it or you're not allowed to eat a hot dog ever again.
It's a tough city.
It's a tough city. As you detail in the book, activism is not new to Mavis, right?
Absolutely, Jim. In the 50s and 60s, African-American artists toured the South and were literally taking their lives into their own hands doing so because of discrimination down there. And the Staple Singers were unique in that the family, Pop Staples and his daughters, Mavis, Cleotha, Yvonne, and his son, Purvis, were traveling not only to the big cities, you know, the Memphises of the world and the Mobile Alabamas, but also to the small towns and churches in between. And those were really perilous for young African-Americans to be on the road by themselves traveling through. But they went from town to town, and a lot of people to this day have never forgotten it. Now, their father, Pop Staples, was instrumental in showing his kids how to navigate this racially divided country. And we're going to get to all of that, but we need to start with the music they were touring with, God.
I can't
help crying sometimes.
Question, Mavis. You know, we forget, we think gospel's always been with us.
Mm-hmm.
But it was being born here in Chicago, the Reverend Thomas Dorsey.
Yes.
And I know you admired Mahalia Jackson,
yes,
hugely.
Yes.
And I want to ask about that, too. But was there pushback from the Dorsey School of Gospel to you guys bringing in all these other elements, blues and country and folk?
Well, Thomas A. Dorsey, you would call his gospel spiritual.
Yeah.
More spiritual songs, like
very church.
Swing
yeah.
low and precious Lord, take my hand, precious Lord. Take my hand, lead me on, let me stand. I'm tired. The gospel, the shouldn't of gospel is upbeat, you know. Mm-hmm. When the saints go marching in, you know. So, but believe me, Thomas A. Dorsey, he was the leader. Mm-hmm. He was the beginning, you know. Pops used to play these big 78 records, and I was a little kid. I'd be in the back room playing with my dolls, and I would hear this. This was the very first lady's voice that I heard. Because he always had the Soul Stirrer, the Pilgrim Travelers, the Nightingales. And then he had this lady come through, and it moved me on up into the living room where Pops was. Mm. And I said, "Who is that, Daddy?" He said, "You like her, don't you, Mavis?" I said, "Yes, sir." Yeah. And he told me, "That's Sister Mahalia Jackson." He would say Sister Mahalia Jackson so much. When I finally met her.
You called her sister.
Mrs. Sister. I said, "Hello, Mrs. Sister Mahalia Jackson."
Oh, man.
Yeah, I told her, I said, "My name is Mavis, and I sing too."
Mahalia was famously not too kind to what she viewed as the competition out there. She was the queen. She wanted everybody to know it.
Yeah.
But for some reason, she took a shine to you. She put her arm around you, and I think there was probably a big age difference that had something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But she was more like a mentor figure to you. And then there was a famous moment in 69 when you did that gospel festival in New York where Mahalia was obviously on her final days, and
yes.
You helped her out, took the microphone from her, and she handed the microphone to you. It was kind of like that symbolic passing of the torch. No other singer she would have thought to do that with except for you. So your relationship with Mahalia was very special.
I'm so proud of it. So proud. She reached over, she told me, "Baby, Haley don't feel so good." Everybody called her Haley. She called herself Haley. And she said, "I need you to help me sing this song." And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I'll help you." And the girl started playing. I didn't even have to ask her what the name of the song was. I was just, you know, being a church girl, I knew what it was. And by the time I finished that first verse, somebody helped her up to the microphone. And there I was,
mm-hmm.
on the same microphone with my idol, my mentor, this great lady, Sister Mahalia Jackson.
What was the song?
Precious Lord,
yeah.
Take My Hand.
Mm-hmm.
Precious Lord. And that was a song that Dr. King, that they requested she sing that at Dr. King's funeral.
Precious Lord, take my hand.
Precious Lord.
Yeah. One of the most famous gospel songs ever.
Yes, indeed.
No, you mentioned Martin Luther King. Another key moment, singing these messages, these message
yes.
songs, your pops always wanted the word to be important.
Yes.
Meeting Martin Luther King
was
a key moment for you as a group, as a family.
It was great.
What was he like?
Dr. King, you know, he was just pure and humble. You know, just to look at him, you would shiver, you know, because this man was just, he was just good, you know. Pops heard him first, we didn't know him. And Pops told us about him. Pops called us to his room one Sunday morning. We're in Montgomery, Alabama. Didn't have to sing until 8 o'clock that night. So Daddy called us, he said, "Listen, y'all, this man Martin is here, Martin Luther King. And he has a church here. I would like to go to his 11 o'clock service. Do y'all want to go?" We said, "Yeah, Daddy, we want to go." We all get in the car. We go down to Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. We were ushered in and seated. Dr. King acknowledged us. He said, we're glad to have Pop Staples and his daughters here this morning. We hope you enjoy the service. That was when I became aware of Dr. Martin Luther King, because me and Yvonne Cleedy, we didn't know who we were going to see. Pops had been listening to him on the radio. And so Dr. King, after the service, he would go to the door and shake the worshipers' hands as they filed out. Well, Pops go, Yvonne Cleedy and I, we shake Dr. King's hand. Then Pops come along. Pops stood there and talked to him for a while. He finally came on. We get back to the hotel, and we in his room talking about Dr. King. He said, listen, y'all, I really like this man. I really like this man's message. And I think that if he can preach it, we can sing it. And that was all we needed. We started writing Freedom Song. March Up Freedom's Highway was the first one. And anything we saw happening in the world, we started writing. Pops would tell the writers, songwriters, they always wanted to write for us. Pops said, well, look, if you want to write for the Staples, read the headlines. Mm-hmm. What we want to read about, we want to sing about what's happening in the world. And if we see something that's wrong, we want to sing a song and try to fix it.
This year we're blind and door we're closed. Why door we're closed, nobody knows.
We better stop, think what's happened, what tomorrow may bring.
And don't you be so wrapped up doing your thing, yeah. Cause we'll build a world for a child to be, a place that people can really say it's free. Please, please, won't you listen to me?
Saturday, just turned 3.
Think about your children.
Mavis, the things that you guys were seeing, you and your sisters, Pops was older. He knew the world, all right? But there had to be some stuff in Alabama and Mississippi and the Carolinas in the mid-50s that was disturbing.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't stay everywhere. You couldn't eat everywhere. You weren't welcome everywhere.
Yes.
And that
yes.
must have been eye-opening, coming from this tight-knit community and the church community in Chicago, mm-hmm. and going to places where I don't know you, but I don't like you because of the color of your skin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Pops got us ready for that. See, because we our record hit first in the South. And that's where we were called to the most, down South. And so Pops let us know, now we're going here. We're going down to Mississippi. We're going down to Georgia, Alabama. Everybody y'all got to know, everybody is not like the people in Chicago. Everybody don't love you. Mm. Your color, your skin is different from the. And then he finally just said, white people, they're prejudiced. They don't like. My grandparents were slaves. He would tell us all about, slavery time, and they still wanted to be going down there. So we were ready. It was heartbreaking when we would go to a hotel and we couldn't stay there. We couldn't stay. We would go to a restaurant. You have to go to the back door if you want to be there. It was sickening. But Pops had taught us to be brave and be strong and know who you are. They don't have to like you. You love yourself. You know who you are and stay strong, walk tall, don't let nothing like that get you. That's where that song come from. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around.
Yeah.
Ain't gonna let nobody, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody, Lordy, turn me around. Keep on a walking, Lordy, keep on a talking, Lordy, marching up to freedom, Lordy.
Ain't gonna let segregation, Lordy,
turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let segregation, Lordy,
ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I know which way I'm headed. Mm-hmm. And I know I got God on my side. That's all I care. me and Yvonne and Cleta, we see some shoes in the store. We want to buy Jackson, Mississippi. Daddy said, okay, y'all go on down there. Go on downtown, get your shoes. Don't start nothing. Mm-hmm. Then in the next breath, he say, and don't take nothing either. So Cleta was our spokesperson. We go in the store, we see these shoes. Cleta says, yes, we would like these, see these shoes in three different sizes. And she gave the lady our sizes. She came back with the shoes. And Cleta said, well, we need to try these on. And that's when they get you. Well, no, hon, you, if you want to try them on, you have to go behind that curtain over there. And that curtain was an old raggedy croaker sack bag. Mm. You know, you got to go. You can't sit out here. And Cleta said, oh, well, no, we can't take these. And that's when you get, oh, y'all ain't from here, are you? Mm. And Cleta would say, oh, yes, ma'am, we live here. We've been living here all our life, you know. And we going back to the hotel. Actually, it was a home. People would turn their homes into hotels for black entertainers. Mm. Edward Lee, that was the Edward Lee house where we were staying in Jackson. And every, Dixie Hummingbirds, all the black artists, they would have to stay in the homes that people had prepared for black artists. It was rough, but we were happy. We were with our father. When we sang, people liked us. Every once in a while, you'd run into a white person who wasn't bad, you know.
Once in a while, yeah.
Every once in a while. So we didn't fault everybody.
But you never got those shoes.
Mm-mm. We didn't want those shoes. Definitely. If we had to go behind there to try them on, keep them.
Coming up, more from the great Mavis Staples, and we'll review the latest from post-punk outfit Proto Martyr. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot, and we are talking with the incredible gospel and soul singer Mavis Staples.
Now, before the break, Jim, Mavis was telling us about being on the front lines of the civil rights movement as she toured the South in the 1960s with her siblings and father and the Staples Singers. And Mavis and her family certainly encountered their fair share of prejudice and segregation along the way. But she did tell us about some small victories of breaking down the color barrier.
I integrated the Washateria down there in Mississippi. I just went on. Yeah, I had my little bundle. We were visiting my granddaddy in Forest, Mississippi. And while we were standing there, I said, I'm washing my clothes. I walk up to the Washateria, and there's a black side and a white side. Mm. And on the black side, it was full. I couldn't get no washer. So I walked on over to the white side, put my clothes in, put my 15 cent in, started washing my clothes and sit down. And then the black ladies, they saw, she's sitting in there, ain't nobody about hit all of them. And then one got to my granddaddy's house and told him, Thornton, your grandbaby up there, she done integrated that Washateria.
That's a story that doesn't get told enough.
My friend, you know this old world's in a bad condition. Just the other day, I saw a group of little children trying to ride a school bus.
by them being of a different nationality. They weren't allowed to ride the bus. And I imagine if you would ask them about this matter, they would have a word like this to say. Why am I treated so bad?
Mavis, I understand you're a person of faith and incredible kindness and charisma. You emerge from experiences like that without feeling hate. But your dad, how did Roebuck do it? Because, I mean, if somebody disrespects my daughter, you know, I'm going to get Jersey on him. All right? And Greg Kott, too, right?
Yeah.
Somebody disrespects Katie?
They don't mess
with
Katie.
We're going to see Kott get angry, right?
Yes, indeed.
How did he hold it together?
Oh, man. Pops, there were times when we could tell Pops would be so angry, you know, but he'd hold his peace. Mm. And then this one time, Pops and Reverend Franklin, we were together sometime. Purvis and Cecil would, Purvis have to hold Pops, and Cecil would have to hold Reverend Franklin. Mm. That was Reverend Franklin's, Aretha's daddy. They always, these service station guys, you know.
The gas station.
I'm driving. I was the night driver. I've driven from Jackson, Mississippi to Memphis, 3rd and Union. I'll never forget it. I pulled in this service station. It was a huge service station. I parked on the pump on the corner. Well, the office was over that way over. So here comes this tall, young, white boy. Fill it up. I told him, fill it up. After he filled it up, he came for his money. And I asked him, I says, can you wipe the bugs off the windshield? You know, he looked at me for a while, and then he starts slopping around the windshield, got him. And then he came for his money again. Hmm. And I asked him for a cash receipt. And what did I do that for? Oh, N-word, You know, you come over to the office if you want a receipt. And Pop said, pull over there, Mavis. See, this guy, I'm sure he hadn't seen my brother laying on the back seat covered. You know, of course, he's going to drive next. He see this man with mixed white hair. Pops had gray hair from 18 years old. You know, yeah. He wasn't no old man, you know. And me and Cleety, so I pulled over there. Pops goes in to get the receipt. I know Pops asked him, I'm sure he said, why you call my daughter that name like that? And that's how this boy shaking his finger and dad. And when he did that, Pops clocked him.
Wow.
And he fell back. And then he came back and they fought over into the grease part of the service station. And daddy slipped down. He had a crowbar. I said, Cleety jumped out of the car and she beat him in the back, you know. and he got away from Cleety, and he run into his, I knew he was going for a gun. Yeah. And I said, Purvis, they're fighting. And Purvis come from under them coats like Superman. Come out of that telephone booth, and he went up in the air and down on this guy. And that scared him and surprised him too, because he didn't know another man was in that car. I'm driving the Kittlegate car. I'm backing up. And he running. I almost ran over him because he slipped down. He was running over to some 18-wheelers. Mm-hmm. He got over to them. They pulled off. They watched the whole thing. Daddy said, drive, Mavis, drive. All of them was huffing and puffing. I said, Daddy, I don't think I can drive no more. I'm too nervous. He said, Mavis, drive. So I started driving. I get on this bridge, and I see these lights. I said, Daddy, there's some lights behind me. Look like it's 3 cars. He said, keep driving. Get on across the bridge, and then stop. I got across the bridge, and I stopped. When I stopped, they jumped out of those cars, shotguns, dogs were barking.
It was the police.
Yeah.
And
this guy had told him that we beat him up and didn't pay for our gas, you know. And he said, you better stop. He kept calling Pops, boy. Handcuffed daddy to the arm of the car. This boy looked like he wanted to run. And Pops kept telling them, these are my children. We sing gospel music. You can call WDIA. You can call anybody in Memphis, and they'll let you know who we are. And they wouldn't hear that. You know, Juan put the shotgun right on Cleety because she undo her jeans, you know, when she get in the car and she wanted to pull her jeans up. He said, I told you to keep your... They had us on the highway like this, and cars were zooming past us. I ain't never been so scared in my life. I was scared. I said, Lord, I'm not going to see Mama no more. I just knew they were going to lynch us. They put us in three different cars, in those three different cars, and handcuffed up behind our backs.
This man,
this may be my last time.
This
may be my last time, children.
This
may be my last time. Maybe my last time. I don't know
what this may.
I was never so glad to see a police station. They took us to jail instead of out in the woods, you know. Pops walked into this black man mopping the floor. He said, Papa Staples, what you doing here?
Yeah.
And then he saw us coming. He said, I'm your children. For years after that, we could laugh. But at that moment, it was sad. Chief came out and said, all right, who going to tell me what this was all about? And Pop said, I tell you, sir, you take me to another room. And because Daddy still didn't want me to hear everything this boy was saying about me. Mm. Chief come out, he said, you got a receipt for this gas that the boy said you didn't pay for. Sent Cleety out to get this receipt. Cleety come back with the receipt, all bloody. Because Pop knocked some blood out of that, you a lot of blood.
He got him good.
Yeah, he got him good. And that boy won't mess with nobody else. No. he was a young kid, tall and skinny. I'll never forget this. Never. So here come Cleety with the receipt. And that proved that we paid for our gas. And then the chief told him, get them handcuffs off them people. Let them people go. And all the policemen, they want to start joking. One, you know, I believe me and my wife saw y'all on the Hootenanny. Mm-hmm. I believe we saw y'all on TV. And Purvis said, man, get them handcuffs off my sister. That vein had come out of Purvis's head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you see that vein back up, he's mad. He's angry.
Yeah. You were a tight-knit group. I mean, and you were traveling through the South, just the family in Pops' car,
mm-hmm.
Cadillac. He had a gun. He told me that he would keep just in case.
Yeah, in a trunk.
And the poor guy at the gas station didn't realize that Pops was a boxer when he was at growing up on Dockery Farm.
Right,
so he
right.
knew how to take care of himself.
Oh, he could swing, yeah.
But it could have gone the other way. You could have wound up in the woods.
Oh, please. Over. And then I wouldn't be sitting here with you guys.
Right, right.
It could have wound up the other way.
Right.
If I hadn't walked, I often think about if I hadn't said, Purvis,
yeah.
if he had gotten into that drawer, because he was going for a gun,
yeah.
I would have no daddy. You know, God was looking out for us.
Ain't that new?
Good news.
Oh, ain't that new?
Good news.
Oh, carry here.
Ain't that new?
Jesus bled and died. Oh, ain't that new?
Ain't that new?
And the next morning, Pittsburgh Courier, all of y'all had the news.
Mm-hmm.
And the Staples singer beat up white man in Memphis, Tennessee. And my friends would say, Mavis, your family beat up a white man? I said, yes, we did. Yes, we did. But there were times I would see Pops, like you say, has he ever gotten over Mississippi? This song, Blowing in the Wind, when we first heard Dylan mm-hmm. sing that, Pop said, wait a minute, y'all. Listen to what that kid is saying.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man?
How many roads must a man walk down before you can call him a man? And Pops would tell us stories about when he was in Mississippi, if a white man was coming towards him on the same side of the street, he had to cross over.
Mm. You know the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. Answer
You were the first group outside of the folk movement to record Dylan's music.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a super well-known figure at that point, but
right.
you brought his music to a new audience.
Blowing in the Wind.
Blowing in the Wind.
Blowing in the Wind was first.
Amazing version of Masters of War and a number of songs that you recorded of
yeah.
Bob's.
Now Masters of War, you build all the big guns, you build a big plane.
And you had a friendship with Bob. Yes. He seemed to take a shine to you. That story's been told a few times.
Yeah.
But,
it's such
and,
a good story,
you
though.
And Dylan were an item.
We got to hear it
Talk
again.
About it a little.
Oh, you ain't got to hear it again.
Robert Zimmerman had a crush on you,
yeah,
Mavis.
Well, I turned him down. He wanted to get married.
And he still talks about it.
He still talks about it. But you know, when I was working with him last summer, I proposed to him.
About time.
Yeah, I proposed to him. But you know what he told me? Get in line.
Oh, God.
He got a string of girls waiting, yeah. and I got to get at the end of the line.
Oh, my God.
Do you think the reason Pops recognized a similar message and spirit in Dylan's music is, you know, Dylan grows up Jewish, northern Minnesota. He never fits in.
Yeah.
He's excluded, too. Do you think there was a common ground there?
Mm-hmm. He was, I liked him. Mm. I liked his personality, and he would talk to me. He talked to Yvonne a whole lot more because they were gangsters, you know. And then he and Purvis, they would sit out on the stoop all night with a bottle of wine and talk all night. He was talkative. He was friendly, and he was comical, you know. And so I really liked him, you know. Dylan's songs are so truthful, and the stories that he's telling, where this kid come from? He's so young to be writing stuff like this, you know. I just said it was genius, you know, but I don't know, had he ever had a hard time like Pops did, you know? But his songs were sound like they were written for us.
Getting serious again for a minute with Dr. King, the role of the Staples Singers marching with the Civil Rights Movement and Dr. King. We are in the midst of Black Lives Matter. Get philosophical for us, Mavis. What's the role of music in inspiring people to fight injustice?
You know, I watch this news. I watch the news. Sometimes I feel like I'm back in the 60s, you know? And then I wonder, well, music, do we need a song now? Is this what we need? The songs helped so much back then, you know? And they keep asking me, Mavis, what are you gonna do on your next record? You know, and I'd be laying in the bed at night wondering, what should I do? Should I go strictly gospel? Should I go protest again, you know? I don't know what to do.
Back up. You said it helped so much. You're walking down a street into nightclubs that are going to be swung at your head, into dogs that are going to be turned loose at you, into fire cannon water hoses.
Yeah.
How did music help you face? I'd have run the other way. I don't know if song would have had me marching.
The songs inspire you. The songs motivate you. The lyrics in the songs. That's what is the lyrics, what the song is saying. Keep on marching. People get ready. There's a train a-coming. You don't need no ticket. You just get on board. You know, you don't need no ticket for this. Mm. You just get on board, start singing. And that, as black people, That's what takes us over, our song. You know how African, we went to South Africa, we went to West Africa, and they're always, you know, moving and music. That I don't know if it's just a black person that it happens to, but it keeps us going. Music is a strong weapon. James Brown started a lot of it too with, "Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud." Music is the answer.
So Pops dies in 2000. That's a huge, obviously a momentous event in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But in some ways, after pulling yourself together, and obviously it's a shocking change in your life, it seems like you came back with new motivation. And every time I've seen you perform, it's got to be dozens of times now since your father died, you have mentioned his name. It said, "I'm carrying on his work," and he was carrying on Martin Luther King's work. And it's mm-hmm. like this, the circle will not be unbroken.
Right.
We're going to carry it through. Right. There's still work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's 50 years later and there's not been a great deal of progress, but making a song like Freedom Highway, which your father wrote the weeks after the Selma March.
Right.
You're still performing that today.
That's right.
And it hasn't lost its relevance.
That's right.
Feel like anything is shifting at all, or do you feel like the next generation is picking up the torch in some ways? Are artists hearing what you're saying, and do you feel like that message will be carried forward?
Yeah, you know, I have long wanted to teach youngsters to jump on board, you know, rappers. Kids learn rappers song lyrics so quick, you know, if they had just had something in the lyric that was freedom, that was for us,
mm-hmm.
you know. I am seeing this little kid, Chance the Rapper.
I made it through, made it through, made it through. And everything I gave to you, I gave to you, I gave to you. You got it, you got it, you got it. It's coming,
coming, coming, coming.
So are you ready?
Kendrick Lamar is another artist who's
singing. Yeah, Kendrick Lamar
is kind
of
too. Very powerful songs.
I welcome those kids. I welcome them. And with them being young, they're putting them out front.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be surprised at how they can change the world.
But if God got us, then we gon' be all right.
We have been talking with Mavis Staples. It's been an absolute honor, Mavis.
Thank you.
Little old Sound Opinions has Mavis Staples on it. Our life is complete.
Oh,
thank
shucks.
You so much.
I'm honored to be on Sound Opinions.
If you want to hear more of our conversation with Mavis Staples, which includes her singing a song written for her by Prince, you can find it at our website, soundopinions.org.
And as always, we want to hear from you. Has Mavis's music had an effect on you? Give us a call and leave a message on our hotline, 888-859-1800. Or you can connect with us through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. When we come back from a break, we'll remember the late screaming eagle of soul, Charles Bradley. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Oh, they tell me. Tell me.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and we've got some new music to review.
Not by my own hand. Automatic writing by phantom will. Now with my own voice. Pleurisy made to stand on two legs. That's how bomb I get. In this age of blasting trumpets. Paradise for fools, infinite wrath, and the lowest deep, a lower depth.
That is a little bit of A Private Understanding, the first track on the fourth album by Proto Martyr, Relatives in Descent. Greg, you and I have been following this group pretty much from the beginning, when it formed in Detroit in 2010 around the incredible working-class vocalist. I say that because he sounds like the guy at the end of the bar, mm-hmm. Joe Casey. You know, the debut album, 2012, began to win fans in the metal underground, in the post-punk indie rock world, kind of crossing genre boundaries. Two records followed. We had the band in the studio for a live performance and an interview back in 2015, around the time of the third album, The Agent Intellect. Now it has signed to the prestigious UK indie Domino Records, and we have album number 4, which the guitarist Greg Ahi has said was inspired equally by the Raincoats and Mika Levy's orchestral compositions. Like I said, not the average post-punk noise metal band. These guys have always been very ambitious. Let's play a track and we'll come back with our reviews. This is a song called The Chuckler from Relatives in Descent, the newest fourth album by Proto Martyr on Sound Opinions.
As a bash pit on a thrift store coat, a smell of sauerkraut and clothes. An angry customer's face, confused cause they didn't get their way. It's something they would never allow, but they have to allow. Because this pitiful exchange will be the sole high point of our day. Chuckling till there's no more breath in my lungs, and it really doesn't matter at all.
That is The Chuckler from Proto Martyr, the fourth studio album, Relatives in Descent. Jim, I think this is one of the best rock bands in America right now. No holds barred on that. They keep getting better. It's hard to believe because I did love the previous album quite a bit. It was one of my top records of 2015. Relatives in Descent continues the trend. Greg Ahi, I think, is an incredibly underrated guitar player. He writes a lot of the music in the band, but the way his tone, agile, but also kind of wild and untamed. I love the way in songs like A Private Understanding or Windsor Hum, he just sort of ambushes the song right in the middle. Mm-hmm. The tone changes and, you know, all of a sudden that guitar jumps out of the shadows at you and really grabs you by the neck.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Everything's fine.
arrangements are consistently surprising. There's a great use of dynamics in there. The rhythm section is extremely good. Scott Davidson's bass sometimes takes over those songs, a very overdriven style. Alex Leonard's drumming is also unconventional. With a lot of post-punk bands, you hear this sort of big walloping sound. He's kind of more rippling and orchestral,
He's very dexterous.
He can be very textured.
You heard that at the beginning of A Private Understanding. Those drums are the first sound on this record, and they set the tone.
All three of these instrumentalists play a key role in the band. And you mentioned Joe Casey, the guy at the end of the bar ranting. And there is a Bukowski-esque quality about his writing. There's a lot of images that kind of seemed pulled together from different places. But especially on the last two records, the 2015 release and now this one, I'm hearing an emotional undercurrent there. Whereas the previous one was more poignant, this one has sort of a sense of anger about it. And, amid this sort of slate gray backdrop of America and the country as it now is, it's not so much a political record, although you cannot escape the idea that ruin is just around the corner. When he talks in that song about my children, well, what exactly are we passing on to our children? And it's pretty dark.
My children, they are the future. Good luck with the mess I left, you innovators.
I think Up the Tower, where he's ranting about someone who has the hatred brewed within us, stoking the hatred, and then builds to knock it down.
Yeah.
There's no escaping that. I mean, you don't have to read it as an assault on the most famous tower builder in America,
right?
But it's easily
certainly
heard that
possible
way.
To do that. In that song we just played, The Chuckler, there is the trademark Casey sarcasm. I wish there was a better ending to this joke. And I think that's where he sees the country right now. You know, they say rock shouldn't be political. It shouldn't be, funny. This album is all of those things. They address these issues without rubbing your nose in it. This is a great band at the top of its game. It's a buy it record.
Yeah, I will agree. It's definitely a buy it record. And I thought, I've loved the last three Proto Martyr records. I'm not that excited about digging into this one. I was making that horrible prejudging before I listened mistake. And then I played it from the first time I was hooked, and I keep finding things with every subsequent listen. You've used the Bukowski comparison before. You've also cited Nelson Algren in terms of showing great empathy for people who do not get a lot of attention or respect from the rest of society. And to have that from a working class Detroit guy at the end of the bar in this blitzed out city struggling to find its soul, to come back, right? And he cares about people that other people don't care about. There is a beat elliptical approach to the lyrics here. They leave as much out as they tell you, and then the guitars and the drums and the bass fill in those blanks. You're right. They're one of the best rock bands in America today, so a very enthusiastic double buy it.
I'm a victim of loving you. I'm a victim of wanting you.
That is the great soul singer Charles Bradley, who died at the age of 68 on September 23rd. Jim, we had just highlighted him
as a late bloomer
feature segment on Late Bloomers, and a few days later, he's gone. It's really sad. He'd had stomach cancer, was diagnosed in 2016. It spread to his liver, and he was gone soon after. In fact, just days before he died, we were on site at the Goose Island Tap Room, and he was supposed to play that festival that weekend, but had to cancel all those dates just a couple of weeks before. And lo and behold, he's gone now. But he left behind an incredible legacy. Started late, as we said, late bloomer. Wasn't until 62 that he was able to make his debut album after a very difficult life moving around the country, essentially a refugee in his own country. He really had no home for a long time. And then made three stellar albums for the Daptone label. His childhood hero was James Brown, but I hear a lot of Otis Redding in his tone on those records, the passion, the emotion that he had brought, especially to the ballads. On his final album, even though his original songwriting was really key to his development because it was so personal, There was also his ability to transform a song that you would never think he would even knew existed, let alone want to cover.
I know where you're going, and I would have never thought anybody else would cover this song.
Well, he named his third studio album after it, Changes, the Black Sabbath song from the 70s. And you're going, what is he doing covering this heavy, iconic heavy metal ballad? Well, he made it his own in the same way that Aretha Franklin made Respect her own, or Mavis Staples is now kind of owns The Weight by the band. Charles Bradley took this song over because he personalized it. He reconciled with his mother. He'd been apart from his mother for quite a number of years. As I said, he was basically living on the road for many decades in his life. Finally came back to New York in the 90s, reconciled with his mother. He loved his mother, and she loved him, and it was great to bring that whole relationship full circle. Finally, the recognition of that, to have that in his life. And so this song really spoke to him. It took so long to realize I can still hear her last goodbye. But now it seems fitting as a eulogy for Charles Bradley himself. Changes from Charles Bradley on Sound Opinions.
I feel unhappy. I feel so sad. That I ever had. She was my woman. I love her so. But it's too late now. I let her go.
Changes by Charles Bradley covering Black Sabbath, dead at the age of 68. What a talent. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we have an exciting up-and-coming artist, an interview, and a live performance from Jamila Woods.
Greg, we have a few thank yous to say on the way out. Mary Gaffney and Andrew Gill helped us tape the inimitable Mavis Staples, and Sound Opinions is produced by Brendan Banaszak, Evan Chung, Alex Claiborne, and Iona Contreras.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
Skip calling from Columbus, Ohio. As far as Grant Hart's songs, I think Actual Condition from Warehouse Songs and Stories is a great song. As is Pink Turns to Blue from Zen Arcade. And one thing that Grant Hart needs to get more credit for is coming up with great song titles. His titles often alone make you want to hear the song. Thanks.
Hi, Jim and Greg. This is Gabriel calling from beautiful Saratoga Springs, New York, and I'm calling about your episode talking about troubled artists or artists and their bad behavior. Really interesting episode, great discussion. This is something I've thought about a lot since a lot of my favorite art and literature and music has been created by otherwise horrible people. I think that especially during their adolescence when they're spending a huge amount of time, 10,000 hours or whatever it is, you know, in a basement or a bedroom somewhere perfecting their craft instead of learning to be social. So I don't know that it's reasonable to expect the same mind that creates Kind of Blue or Layla or Guernica to really be a fully functional person the rest of the time. If somebody's really able to create something great, we have to take that on its own terms and then deal with their behavior separately. So, thank you.
Hey guys, this is Adam in Merrillville, Indiana, and I want to tell you, I just listened to the Art of the Artist, and just wanted to praise you for including, it's just real nice to hear conversation like that. And I was a little bit disappointed, though, that that section of the program was so short. And I'd love it if that was more of like a continuing thing, like perhaps you might consider coming back to that topic in the future. On that note, it was also nice to hear critical voices of color and also female, which I feel like happened too rarely on y'all's show. Just want to say thanks for tackling that. Man, I got so much to say about R. Kelly, but I feel like I've taken up enough of your time already. But thank you so much. Bye.
Hello, my name is Michael. I'm calling from Chicago. In reference to your late Bloomers program, in the world of jazz, there's a gentleman by the name of John Coltrane. Even though he's a journeyman musician who had played with Miles Davis, he had been kicked out of Miles Davis' group in 56 when he was 30 years old for his drug habit. He kicked his drug habit and started working with a guy by the name of Thelonious Monk, another late bloomer. After that, Coltrane came back to the Miles Davis quartet, and really started making great strides. It was after he was 30 that he became the John Coltrane who made such things as Giant Steps, My Favorite Things, and Love Supreme. Thanks, guys.
No more messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.